Tonight, the book show comes to you from one of the most famous bookshops in the world. Shakespeare and Company is on the banks of the River Seine in Paris. The bookshop is 65 years old and was opened by George Whitman. I'm here with the current owner, Sylvia Whitman, his daughter. Sylvia, the original Shakespeare and Company was opened in 1919 by Sylvia Beach. Tell me about the connection between this bookshop and the original one, which closed during the occupation of Paris in the 1940s.
Part of the connection is the spiritual connection between the two. Sylvia Beach's bookshop was very much the kind of bookshop that George wanted to run. So a bookshop come lending library, one that had a very strong community of writers that we could put up to sleep and give something to eat. And the other connection, well, I suppose George had a daughter, me, and named me after Sylvia Beach. And also Sylvia Beach did come here a lot in the 50s because she was still in Paris, even though she closed her bookshop in 1941. But she was in Paris until she died in 62. And she would come here, especially for readings by Lawrence Durrell and Richard Wright and James Baldwin. In 1958, she was actually at a reading by James Jones. And after that reading, she stood up and said she would be happy for George to take on the name. And so there are various different connections. But for me, the strongest is the fact that it was the type of bookshop that George wanted to run. He really wanted to follow in that tradition.
We also associate, you know, writers like Joyce and Hemingway, Gertrude Stein, F. Scott Fitzgerald, with Sylvia Beach's bookshop. But your father had his fair share of famous writers here too, right?
Yes. They had a few writers that they shared in common. But George's, his bookshop was more connected with the Beat generation. The Beats came to Paris in the late 50s, and they set up in a hotel just down the road on Rue Gilles-Lecoeur, the Beat Hotel, and they were very happy to have a sort of lending library just down the road. Allen Ginsberg came a lot, Anais Nin, Italo Calvino, and George had a very good medical and psychiatric section, so William Burroughs did a lot of his research for Naked Lunch here.
So we're sitting here not on a couch but on a bed that somebody actually sleeps on occasionally, tucked away in a corner beside the piano, and there's so many nooks and crannies and the rickety stairs and people moving around. It's a constant state of flux. It's also, though, a haven for writers to come and stay, and people can come and stay here and, you know, take up shifts at the till and sort of earn their keep, so to speak. I read once that your father claimed that over 40,000 people had actually passed through here and stayed here. Is that true?
We've estimated it to be 30,000. But no, since the first day that he opened the bookshop, he welcomed people to stay here. And that was very much part of the reason for having a bookshop for him. He had spent a lot of time traveling in South America in the 30s and was really marked by the generosity that he came across. For me, it's actually becoming more and more important. The bigger cities are becoming, the less hospitable we are to strangers, I think.
Well, it's true, because on the night of November 13th, when those terrible attacks happened here in the city, you helped people out by putting them up for the night. What was it like here on that night?
I think there were between 15 and 20 people, and we just went upstairs, and luckily we have a lot of bedding here, so because we're used to having a lot of people sleeping in the bookshop, so we just went and got all the extra bedding and brought it down to the library and gave everyone a pillow and a blanket. But I don't think people slept that much. There was a lot of conversation, really. People wanted to be in conversation and talking about what was happening. Everyone was really terrified and wanting to stay together with other people and not to go outside.
Well, thanks so much, Sylvia. Well, the shop downstairs is full of customers rummaging around the floor-to-ceiling bookshelves, and we're always curious to know what people are buying. So let's find out.
I've got The Great Gatsby because it's my favourite book, so I just wanted it in a really nice cover.
The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
The Mark in the Void by Paul Murray. It takes place in Ireland during the economic crisis.
A never-before-published lost novel called Pure Juliet by Stella Gibbons.
I was looking for an author called Saul Bellow.
The Dice Man by Luke Reinhardt. It looks like it's about a psychiatrist, and he uses the dice to make decisions in his life.
I have Ernest Hemingway's Fiesta, The Sun Also Rises.
I can't decide. I have 4 Camus books, which I grabbed because he's French.
This is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. And it was my girlfriend's request.
Pride and Prejudice.
I didn't decide yet. I am just protecting myself from from the cold outside.
I adore Jane Austen, and I've actually never heard of The Beautiful Cassandra. Austen's riotous early stories of drunks, poisoners, and prison breaks written for her family's entertainment when she was a teenager. So that's pretty good.
It's just a nice place to browse around and find a book you don't expect to find in the first place.
Well, plenty of great titles there, and you might have noticed quite a few American accents. No surprise then that American writers have always been attracted to Paris, and the love affair continues. Earlier, you heard Sylvia Whitman say that writers passing through Paris can actually get to stay here at Shakespeare and Company. They're called tumbleweeds, and I'm here with a young American writer, Evan Martinek, who's spending his nights sleeping beside the books. Evan, tell me more about being a tumbleweed.
A tumbleweed is basically an aspiring writer or artist of some kind, and George had the idea to invite people into his bookshop to stay and sleep and work amidst and among books all day long. So,
well, lead the way and show me where you're sleeping tonight.
This building, I believe, is from the 15th century and used to be a monastery.
Wow. So we've just come to the top of these very old stairs and we're in this room which smells really nicely of food, I have to say. So what goes on up here? Is this where you write? Do you sleep up here?
Yeah, so this is George's old home. It's the third floor flat, and it's currently used as a space for writers in residence. It's space for the staff to read on their breaks, you know, spend time and hang out with the bookshop staff.
So where did you sleep last night?
So we're pretty much at full tumbleweed capacity. So what happens is more beds get sprung into action. So I've gone from sleeping in the library, to now sleeping in the bedroom up here on the third floor.
So as a tumbleweed, obviously you've got to earn your keep in some way. So what do you have to do?
So the shop asks of you, if you're going to stay, that you work a two-hour shift every single day, as well as opening and closing the bookshop. So at 9:45, we all show up and open the shop up. And at 10:45, we close it down. So if you're wandering down the streets and you see people buzzing around the shop in the morning or in the evening, it's likely to be tumbleweeds.
Well, thanks, Evan, for showing me around. If you'd like to know more about staying in the bookshop, all you've got to do is email news@shakespeareandcompany.com with tumbleweed in the subject line. I'm joined now by two prolific French writers whose work enjoys success here in France and has also been translated into English. Marie Dariussec is a novelist whose work often deals with themes of absence, loss and sexual politics. Marie, your latest book is a translation of Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own, which, as we know, is an essay about women and writing, originally published in 1929. But why have you decided to translate Woolf's work now?
The book is very well known in France under the title Une chambre à soi, a bedroom of one's own. I've always wondered why, because it's not a bedroom, it's a room. So since the beginning, since the very title, I had to translate it anew.
Also joining us is Frédéric Begbédé, whose novels blend biography, popular culture and real-life events and characters. His last book, Salinger and Una, is a novel about the relationship between J.D. Salinger and Una O'Neill. Frédéric, I'm guessing because you wrote a book about Salinger, you're a big fan of The Catcher in the Rye.
Oh yeah, I like it because it's very short, very simple and very complicated at the same time. It's richer than it looks.
Both of you are writers in France and you both occupy, you know, public positions as intellectuals and as personalities. And I guess we often think of France as a country that cherishes its thinkers and its writers. Frédéric, some would say that you're maybe a bit of a controversial figure. Your book, A French Novel, is based on your experience when you were arrested for drug taking, and you're often on television as well. Do you think there is room in France for a literary bad boy?
Well, it's a tradition in France, you know. Victor Hugo was a literary bad boy. We like that. I don't know if what is worse, taking drugs or going on television. But those are two crimes, I'm sure.
Marie, can a best-selling author be an intellectual? And I know this is something you've grappled with and you've written about.
Fortunately, yes. Perhaps specifically in France, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Why is it then that you think in France it's the two are not as incompatible as they may be, say, outside of this country?
It's a cliché, you know, to say. For example, Sartre was the best-selling author. Camus was a best-selling, enormous best-selling author. We like books, so people tend still to buy books in France. So sometimes it gets to be bestsellers or long sellers. I don't really have an answer. You have an answer, Frédéric?
Well, it's always been bad to sell because people think that the public is stupid. So if you sell, it means you are stupid. Maybe it's to punish success. You know, when you have success, you are annoying, so people start to hate you. And when Marie had a big success for her first novel, of course, I hated her.
Now I'm selling less and less. That's good. But the hatred is still there.
No. You're making an effort, and that's very nice. You're making an effort to be a very cult author without any readers. And that's good. That's good.
That's even worse.
I think it is fair to say that when I come to France and you see people, there were people reading all on the train this morning and in Shakespeare and Company from early this morning, the shop was very busy and bustling. Would you say that literature still really enjoys a very central position in contemporary French society?
We have this image in the rest of the planet that we read a lot, but it's not true. Except some authors like Michel Houellebecq, every time he publishes, it's a big scandal. Everybody talks about his work, but less and less interest for a lot of authors. I think it's like the rest of the world.
Marie, your first book, Pigtails, was published when you were still in your 20s, and it was a huge success. And it's about a woman who's gradually transforming into a sow. All of your work has had very strong female characters, and now you're obviously translating Virginia Woolf. Are you sort of playing or inverting the stereotype of the sort of the sexy French woman, that stereotype people are so familiar with in your novels, and are you responding to it in some way?
I'm a feminist, and I hope my novels are not too feminist. I hope you can read them in many ways. I like to be very ironical about women and men, and I like to play with the stereotypes a lot. All of my novels play, return the stereotypes. For example, Frédéric has just had a baby, and he told me that they are reading my book Le Bébé, who is about having a baby. It's a topic so full of clichés. You know, you have to be happy, it's all wonderful, etc. Babies are so cute. No, they aren't. So I like to search for the truth. You know, I think it's the job of literature to search for the truth in instead of old sentences, you know, frozen sentences.
What is it that you say about babies in your book, especially that Frédéric might take some advice from?
Babies are magnets who attract clichés, who attract ready-made sentences. When you walk in the street with a baby, everybody has a right to tell you, oh, he's cold, oh, you should feed her more, look at how skinny she is. So this sort of stupid, silly things. It's incredibly indiscreet. And I heard all these sentences and I kind of made a book with them, you know. And no, babies are not cute. They are all red and wrinkled and no, they're not cute.
She doesn't only say babies are horrible. she also, it's a book full of fascination for those weird creatures from space, you know.
Frédéric, you wrote a novel called A French Novel. What is that about?
Well, one night I got arrested by the police because I was taking drugs in the street in Paris. And when I was in prison, in a small cell, I asked myself about how did I arrive here and why do I do this? So I started to think about my past, my childhood, my parents, and the whole story of my life.
Is it easier to take artistic license with the lives of others than your own life?
Yes, it's easier. But I know it's very dangerous to do that, so I did it very carefully. In fact, A French Novel is my most difficult book. I mean, it took me a lot of years to be able to put words on my childhood, my parents, their divorce, my brother, because I knew it's very violent to talk about your family. I'm not saying I'm brave, I'm saying I'm a coward, and it took me a lot of time to be able to do this. When I read the diaries of writers or when I read their personal lives. I don't know why. It's stronger. I feel it's maybe it's the danger and the violence of it attracts me for bad and mean reasons.
It's hard not to be in Paris in January and think back to 1 year ago, what happened with Charlie Hebdo. And then a couple of months ago, we had the really horrific terrorist attack with, you know, over 100 people losing their lives. Things haven't fully settled down here, and the world has been quite mesmerised by the response here in Paris. How did you both feel about that as people and as writers?
My first reaction to the Charlie Hebdo attacks was to propose my services to write for them, because the only thing I knew was that the newspaper had to go on, this silly newspaper that I love. Another thing, just after November 13, I was invited to Sweden for one of my novels. And for the very first time in my life, I was seen as the representative of a country, and I had to answer for a country, which was very weird. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that at all.
For me, I always like to have drinks in cafes, so I continue to do this. I feel that sometimes when I go out since November, people are laughing a little bit too loud. As when you are in a funeral, you laugh too loud, or you're a little bit crazy. People are a little bit more crazy than usual. I guess it was the same in New York after 9/11.
For English language readers, obviously we can't access a lot of the responses and work of French writers to recent events from a language point of view. But one writer that is in translation and is popular is Michel Houellebecq, and particularly his last novel, Submission, which details fundamentalism and a future possible Islamic Republic in France. How is his work received here in France?
Well, it was a huge scandal. Everybody was yelling at each other, and finally, it was the best-selling book of the year. So, big interest. Personally, I think it's a funny book, and I think it shouldn't be taken too seriously.
I read him in general, but I didn't read that one. I wanted to stay apart. I was very much in shock with the Charlie Hebdo attacks. I don't know. I just didn't feel like reading him. This book, I mean. It so happens that the cover of the Charlie Hebdo of the week of the attacks was about Michel Houellebecq. So I don't know, I did this connection very strongly. I didn't feel like reading that book.
The book says, imagines that right. France in a few decades will become an Islamic Republic. Yeah. So it's really politic fiction, but really very, very, it's a satire. It's very exaggerated.
And touched a nerve, no doubt. Frederick, to go back to one of your novels, Windows on the World, from 2003, it's a story about the last moments of a father and son who were on top of the World Trade Center just after September 11th. Would you be able to do something similar responding to Paris? Do you think you could set a novel based on what's happened here in the last couple of months?
The answer is no. I could do it because I was far away. When you're too close, maybe it's too painful and too strange, and I would be too violent. I would be very stupid, I think. So I could not, maybe in a few years.
Well, I imagine a lot of French writers would feel very similarly. And I wonder, you know, if in the future we'll see other people try to interpret these events. But today's discussion has been really interesting. It's been great to speak to you both. A French novel by Frédéric Begbédé is published by Fourth Estate, and the work of Marie Deriussec is published by Faber. Now, Regan Hutchins has joined tour guide Marie Siguré, who's part of the Localers group, who organised the Paris Literature Tour. She's guiding him across three centuries of French writing, beginning with the philosopher Voltaire.
Marie, you've brought me to the banks of the River Seine. We're very close to the Louvre, and there's a statue of the Enlightenment writer Voltaire, who dominated the 18th century. Who was Voltaire?
So Voltaire was the big figure of the Enlightenment period. He's known for his philosophical tales, like for example Candide, that is still today a very, very important book. Candide is about this young man. He's very optimistic at the beginning of the tale, and is discovering through life that it's not all about beauty and everything is easy. No, it's very hard. He's discovering cruelty and the murder, and he's changing his mind about life. So when it was published anonymously, and it was a tale against the church as well. It was very important for the people to understand the church had certain rules, and Voltaire wanted to just break those rules and to have a free mind on many, many questions, such as morality and justice, tolerance, but it's really talking to everyone.
And this statue of Voltaire has this very strange look on his face. He's kind of got a little bit of a smile, he's a little bit wrinkled.
He is kind of cheeky man. He was very critical of his enemies, and that's why you can look at his face thinking he's very intelligent, but at the same time could be a little bit mean.
So it's getting a little bit cold here, and we have to cross the river and go down along the quays to the Cathedral of Notre Dame, where we're going to talk about Victor Hugo, the 19th century author, and his book, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, with its famous character, Quasimodo.
When the child was taken from the sack, he was a monster of deformity. The poor little wretch's head was close to his shoulders. His back arched, his breastbone protruded, and his legs were twisted. In truth, Quasimodo was but an apology for a human being.
That description, Marie, that we heard of Quasimodo is disturbing to modern ears, but Victor Hugo presents him as a sympathetic character. What is the book about?
So the book is mostly about three main characters: Esmeralda, beautiful Bohemian, we have Quasimodo, the deformed, and Frollo, the Bishop of Notre Dame. But the book is all about their fate, all the fate reunited, the three characters. And around that, there is, of course, love. So all these themes that are in the books are typical of this romantic period.
So we're tucked away down a small side street beside the church, and there are bells ringing everywhere. And in a way, the cathedral is the real hero of the novel.
Yeah, it is very central. Everything is happening in or just in front of it. So it's very, very important. At the time of Victor Hugo, the question was to restore it or not. It was in a very bad shape. He wanted to save it and to restore it the proper way. Victor Hugo has a saying, "If we have no past, we will not have any future." So he wanted to conserve this past and this cathedral, Notre Dame.
So we're moving now from the romantic age to the 20th century and to the writer Albert Camus. Where are we going, Marie?
We're going on Saint-Germain-des-Prés on the left bank.
All the way to the left bank. Let's go. We're standing on a small street in the left bank with cafes, restaurants, people sitting outside on the street. It's like a little village. But we have this image of Paris, don't we, of writers sitting in cafes and discussing things. Where does this come from?
We know that all the writers lived this bohemian life since the First World War, really. This neighborhood became the place to be for the writers. They were going inside the cafe to be close to the heater, to spend all day. They were using the cafe as their offices, like, for example, Sartre or de Beauvoir, and Camus, of course.
Yeah, you mentioned Sartre and de Beauvoir and Camus and his book, The Outsider. Marceau is the main character, and his mother dies, and there's a sort of a crisis in his identity. Why is he an outsider?
He's an outsider because he's a non-conformist. He's not expressing the feeling that the society expects from him. For example, he's not sad when his mother died, he's not feeling any regrets when he's killing a man.
He kills an Arab man on the beach, and it's quite shocking because he has no real explanation for what he does.
Yeah, so at the end of the book, is explaining during his trial that is the heat from the sun that made him committed the crime, which is completely absurd reason to kill a man. And that exactly the sense of the book is how life has no sense. And that's the point of the book, is to express the absurdity of life. And Camus, his whole work is about this absurdity.
So we've talked about novels from the 18th century, 19th century and 20th century. And why do you think that these novels are still so important for readers today?
Because everything they talk about is still happening today. So what about the religion tolerance, love, of course, natural disaster, injustice, how to conform or not. All these problems are still with us, are still very modern. And yeah, writers must always tell those stories because it's the human condition.
Well, Marie, despite the cold, I've absolutely loved this little tour of Paris. And now I'm afraid you've got to show me how to get back to Shakespeare and Company because I'm lost.
It's not so far. We can make it.
And we hope Regan makes it back in one piece. If you want to join the Paris Literature Tour, you can book on localers.com. Well, that's it for this evening. Thanks so much to all our guests on tonight's show and to our wonderful hosts at Shakespeare and Company. You can listen to this episode and all of our episodes again on rte.ie or SoundCloud. And thanks to the production team, producer Regan Hutchins and series producer Zoe Cummins.